Welcome to Burning in Hell.
What's up, you guys? Welcome to another episode. We are in the dark, burning depths, the lava hot hell on Earth, and I am with Z-Way Fumido. Is that how you pronounce your last name?
Yes, but I usually just go by Z-Way, but yeah.
Z-Way, just like Cher, it's just Z-Way. Z-Way, do you remember how we met?
Was it at, I think, for ASOS?
It was.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like a little bit of a cooler vibe than I am. And I walked in and I was immediately like, didn't know what to do. I was like talking to the coordinator, like the marketing person. And she's like, bitch, make some friends.
LOL.
And then you were just like very warm and good energy and big smile.
Thank you.
And I remember wanting to leave. And then like I ran into you at the end and I was like, okay, I can survive this for a little longer because I like this girl's energy. And
oh my gosh.
Do you remember me?
Yeah, of course. I just remember you being really, really outgoing. And so You were just like an easy person to talk to because it was like I didn't have to pull teeth for a conversation. You had opinions. I think we were talking to someone who was like breaking up with their boyfriend. Right? We were both like I have a problem where I am like nosy and I give a lot of prescriptive advice to strangers. And so we were both like, you should do this and don't do that. And we're both like single.
Fully invested, giving terrible, like very passionate advice. We were
totally.
Like, also, when I'm single, I have this like negative mode with men where I have no patience. And like, if a girl's like, my boyfriend took too long to text, I was like, burn down his neighborhood.
Don't say that on the internet. You're gonna get flagged on like no fly list.
Ugh, this is burning in hell. This is hell. This is where bad things happen. Z-Way, let me give a little intro because I just went into it. But she is a writer and comedian. But you started as an intern at Comedy Central. Went to Northwestern. You're an angelic nerd. I did my research. Basically, week two, this bitch comes on her internship, writes a joke that gets used on the Stephen Colbert Show.
Yeah, Colbert Report.
Incredible. Then you've written for The Onion, which I always think is like the most clever sense of humor. You were a writer on The Rundown with Robin Theed.
Thede.
And she also, you were only 25 when you got that job.
I think so. I don't remember. Time kind of has, I don't know what day it is. So maybe.
Time is a social construct,
truly.
But it was early in your life. And now you're currently a writer on Desus and Marrow.
Yes.
And you have your own YouTube. She sometimes works, as you can tell. She has her own YouTube show entitled Baited with Z-Way. And you also, before quarantine hit, you had a pop show in Williamsburg that I was lucky to be a part of once.
That's right. You did push-ups.
Oh, my God.
Which I thought was so funny.
Okay, so pop show. Do you want to explain pop show to the people?
So pop show is a... So it's a premise on the idea that I want to be a pop star, but maybe I don't have the skill set to become one. I don't have a $1 billion label to back me. So I host a monthly show where I invite my favorite comedians to sing songs about pop culture and politics at Union Hall. So, and every month I'll make a new song about Omarosa or about making it clap for democracy or whatever AOC. And so I dropped an album called Generation Z-Way, and Hannah was one of my guests, and she did push-ups, and it was the funniest thing I've ever seen. It was so funny.
You are too nice to me because, yeah, I got invited, and I was like, who should I be? And I decided I was going to be Pink, and I didn't realize, like, how long the lyrics would be. Like, I was like, I'll do, you know, a minute of song, and then I realized, like, 3 seconds in, I'm like, this is too long of a song to sing. So I just started doing push-ups because I just think Pink is the, like, most physical badass bitch, and then I didn't think of any other dance moves or really comedy, but the energy was amazing. And also, I don't know if this is like annoying, but I kind of feel like you're kind of an it girl right now in comedy.
Oh, thank you. I would not describe myself as that, but I welcome the description.
But I think you are an it girl because you wouldn't describe yourself as that, because actual girls who think they're it girls are annoying.
Hey, God bless.
But you have this, like, aesthetic to you, like, from your eyeliner to, like, the confidence of the outfits that you wear to your hair. Were you always this, like, stylish or, like, almost fashion forward?
I've always loved fashion. Famously, I did a show with Luann de Lesseps, and she thought I was 19 years old because I was wearing all pink. She thought I was in college. So I've always been passionate about, like, clothes and stuff, but I've never, like, I didn't really have the means growing up to, like, have the coolest, flyest, like, pieces. But now as an adult, I've just become more creative in finding, like, accessories and different, like, clothes and, like, color palettes that I really like. But so I've always loved fashion. I've always been obsessed with Naomi Campbell.
Oh, do you have any stores that you recommend for people or where you find inspiration?
Well, I don't shop anymore really because of COVID-19, famously the global pandemic that has kept me in my house for the last 3 months.
Also, I want to briefly discuss Baited, or not really briefly, but now that you mentioned Luann, I kind of feel like she has to be on it.
So I messaged her. She did not respond. But I'm hoping that, you know, as the show grows, that I am able to book bigger and better guests.
Also, oh my God, I keep forgetting all these things that make us connected. You also are a reality TV stan, am I right?
I'm a Bravoholic specifically.
Oh my gosh, you must have opinions.
I have strong opinions, yeah.
I'm a Bravo-lebrity, you know, try not to get fired right now.
Always.
And it's funny because, you know, Stassi was fired and Kristen was fired. And then, you know, then you start thinking like, okay, where does it end? And like, Luann, that really was like 2 years ago.
I know. Or even like Landy Glanville saying that like Black people couldn't swim. Like, there are a lot of, when you start to open the closet and like rifle through the different like demons, there's a lot there.
Yeah, then, like, the entire cast of Southern Charm.
I mean, that show is filmed on a plantation, so it's a tough one.
As someone who's seeing these cancelings, what is your opinion? Like, do you think that Bravo should go through some, like, diversity training for everyone? Like, what do you think?
I don't know if every single person should be fired for being racist or having racist bias, but I do think that there's a really compelling way as a reality TV producer, I'm scripted television producer, to cover it. And like, okay, if Jax is like really this demonic guy who like says racially insensitive stuff, like put it on the television, let us like hate him. Mm-hmm. I think that there's no need to sugarcoat it for the audience because we're not stupid. So I would actually just like to see the toppling of these Bravo statues personally.
I mean, we saw on Real Housewives of Dallas.
Yes.
What is her name?
Leanne Locken,
who basically like was extremely racist towards one of the girls being Mexican. She called her a chirpy Mexican. She was yelling at her for being a Mexican. And the girls at the end got very upset in the reunion. But then stuff came up from like Brandi Redmond. Like,
totally. The premise of these shows is that we want to watch monstrous people, right? Yes. And how many people who are the worst scum of the earth are also happen to be not racist, also happen to support equality, you know? Those are two different circles, I believe. So the chickens are kind of coming home to roost. Exactly what we'd expect these people hold as self-evident truths about the world or what they're saying, doing, and practicing. So it shouldn't be surprising, yet it is. I don't know. I would just like to watch these people get dragged by the producers. Like, stop being mean to Sheena Shea. She seems like a lovely person. Like, just drag. Yeah, Shishu. We love Shishu.
Yeah, love Shishu. Exactly. Shishu, the show wouldn't be there without Shishu. I stand Shishu 100%. All the way. Of all the people on Vanderpump, she's been the nicest to me personally, and I don't forget that kind of shit.
I like her, and I like Katie Malone. Katie Maloney.
Katie Malone, she's also been so active during this time in speaking
up. Yeah, I like her.
People like to hate on her because she's not too expressive or too giggly or too jokey, but I think she's kind of just real. I think totally. Ariana is guilty of that too, where people think she's a downer, but really she just doesn't care to be fake a lot of the time.
No, I think that Katie and Ariana's biggest issue is that they're smart. and I think that's it's just a hard, it's hard for that cast in particular to be on the brighter side of that spectrum.
Well, you hit the nail on the head before when you said, like, the casting for reality TV, they're not picking the people with the most morals. They're picking impulsive, loud. That's where Stassi Schroeder has an issue. You can be great. She's amazing on reality TV because she has so many terrible opinions that she just says all the time and doesn't care what people think. And that's fine for reality TV. But then you go on your podcast and try to speak from like a preaching standpoint about stuff that you're ignorant about. And that's when there's an issue. But you're so right. Like, if they fired everyone on reality TV for questionable morals, we would have no one on reality TV.
And you know, the genre wouldn't exist, although I don't know if that's necessarily a bad thing, but it definitely would be the end of what we know on modern television.
So can you explain the concept behind Baited, how you came up with it?
Well, it's just, I mean, I think it fundamentally is about how uncomfortable I feel at all given times as like a Black woman existing in society. I'm constantly having to deal with race and whether someone is talking down to me because of my race or because of my gender or a combination of the two. And so it is my response to like taking back power in my life and saying, you know what, instead of feeling perpetually uncomfortable about race, I'm going to have really uncomfortable conversations about race so we can all acknowledge the biases that we are carrying as we exist and are socialized in this country. And I think that like no one is beyond reproach. No one is perfect and knows everything there is to know about how to be an upstanding, totally moral, not racist person. And so I think that it's just about bringing to light the fact that we are not perfect and we need to learn each day how to unlearn racist bias.
Well, there's something beautiful too about you're the one in the interaction. Like, you're not watching two white people try to discuss race. Like, you're almost like holding their hand through it as they're tripping and being like, we're in it together, but like, you're fucking up, but like, we're good.
Totally. I try to be nice just because I really don't want to vilify anyone for not having the perfect answer to, quote, how many Black friends do you have? You know, that's just a hard question to answer. And there's not necessarily a right answer for that. So I'm just trying to explain.
Well, that's a great question. So I went on Baited. Yes. And I went on it and I actually had done zero research because I'm always like, oh, I'm better on the fly. And I'll just like do stuff. But I watched, was it Jordan Firstman?
Yeah, he was first.
He went first, and it was a bloodbath, and he's hysterical, but, like, the comments, and I was just like, oh my god, what did I sign up for? And I consider myself, like, from a very diverse community. I grew up in Brooklyn. My mom is, like, head of diversity initiatives in New York City public schools. Like, so when I did Baited, I was, like, kind of cocky, and then during it, I left it feeling just like thoughtful, if that makes sense.
Good. That's my goal. My goal is to not have anyone feel bad or cry. My goal is for people to learn. Myself, I learned so much from these conversations, truly.
I bet you do. And I even was reading about you as I've like went in a deep dive for the last hour. But you said how you've been doing it for 5 years and how you've changed yourself in terms of your own biases and your own kind of knowledge. So you've changed as a host and how you deal with conversations.
Totally. Well, I used to be like right out of college, and I studied African-American studies, poetry, and film in college. Right out of college, you're more radical. I was more radical where I'm like, yes, black and white. And like, there's good guys and there's bad guys and there's no in between. And if you are racist, you should be put in jail, you know? And so after, like, I've grown up since I was 22 years old. And obviously I see that the world isn't so binary and it's not really productive to indict everyone who doesn't agree with you or indict people who don't know what they don't know. And so I think that, so I'm just trying to help people learn and I'm trying to heal people. And hopefully people who watch my videos can feel healing. There's a catharsis that comes with watching a white person or a black person or an Asian person like answer these questions and not be perfect and show their anti-black and like racist bias. But ultimately I want people to go and say, hey, you know, maybe I don't know who Marcus Garvey is, but you know, maybe I should go like read a book, go Google him. Maybe I should go like listen to James Baldwin on audiobook. Like, I just want people to explore. I just want people to constantly expand their repertoire of knowledge.
Yes, and I do think I love making people uncomfortable. Maybe it's like why I like reality TV. Maybe it's like even in this podcast, like when we get a little darker, I like to ask. I think me and you in general, just in normal life, I like to have deep fucking conversations.
Totally.
I don't care to bullshit. So I love the idea that you were like, let's get uncomfortable and dig deep. What are some questions in Baited that make white women the most uncomfortable?
I mean, every question makes everyone uncomfortable. Like, let's just start there. And honestly, there's a lot of influence that comes from Andy Cohen on Bravo. As far as the questions where he will be like, oh, Susie from Milwaukee thinks you suck. Do you agree? And it's like, whoa, that feels like a personal attack written by one of your staff members. So there's a lot of inspiration coming from that. But ultimately, I think the most complicated question is, what do you like qualitatively about Black people?
Yeah.
That's a hard question because it's, what do you say?
Well, I think I remember you asking me that and I basically was like, Black people, white people, they all have different things. They're all different and you can't generalize a race qualitatively was like kind of where I was going, but that is kind of like the safest thing.
No, that's a good answer. That's a good answer. And you know, most people do not say that.
I minored in gender and women's studies at Wisconsin. And that was where I first realized how rhetoric really affects the world. But then you get seen as like a like kind of weak in the comedy world.
Yes. But also the comedy world is toxic. So
well, comedy world, who are the gatekeepers? White men.
But here's the honest to God truth, right? If I am being myself, there are people in this community who will not like me for breathing. They will not like me for eating. They will not like me for looking a certain way. So all I can do is try to protect our community's most vulnerable and be honest and true to what I believe in and what I stand by. So I just don't think I can adjust my personality for people who think it's quote unquote pussy to care about Black equal rights. It's like, well, you're backwards and antiquated, and you know society is moving away from you.
Yeah, and I think there's so many people in the community who still think like, well, that's like one thing I noticed when I started doing stand up is like when a woman would go on stage, like the men who were watching the other comics would like leave.
People hate women. Yeah.
And I was like, this is fucking absurd. And that's when I realized there's such an incredible female community in comedy. And I like this idea of just like how the gatekeepers kind of have to evolve and change to kind of make everything more diverse and have a more wide range of voices. But I remember booking my first show at The Stand and I ended up booking my friend Matt Richards, who's Black, and also my friend Jordan Fisher, who's Black. And then, like, it hit me, and I was like, oh, I have two Black guys on the show. If I had one more, is it, like, a Black show now? And it's, like, the fact that I even thought that is, like, you never think after two white guys, like, oh, is this a white guy show now? No, it's just a comedy show. So I feel like the more people that are in power and make those decisions to be, like, I could be me and just, like, four Black dudes on a show, it's just a great comedy show.
Or rather, it is about race, but it's like a positive attribute, right? Like it's comedians that maybe your audience who is like predominantly from Bravo maybe haven't experienced, haven't been open to. So it's like, I think that what you're saying two things. One thing that you're saying, it sounds like, is that like whiteness shouldn't be the default. Like a show with five white dudes shouldn't be like, that's just a comedy show, but a show with five Black dudes is like quote unquote.
Exactly. Or if there's too many women, it becomes like a female show.
Exactly. And I totally agree. Like I don't think that those things should be pejorative, but also conversely, I think that it's like cool that you put diverse people on your show because it's like, yeah, let's celebrate these cultures. Like everybody has something to say, and it's like high time that we give people who aren't getting booked on shows an opportunity to make money and like and get put their voice out there. So it's like a double-edged sword because it's like a Black. There's nothing wrong with a Black show, but it's
I
like,
just hate the idea of like the token girl on the show or the token like Black person on the show, and it needs to stop. Especially when they're a lot funnier than some of the other comics going on. But I also think when you said it is about race, that's one thing that I hope this movement has helped, where growing up, race was like very talked about because I would have in a class with like, you know, there'd be Black people, Asians, Muslims, Puerto Ricans. I had my Puerto Rican friends that I'm going to hang out with my Puerto Rican friends. Like they talk about each other and like race was just talked about. But then you go to, when I went to Wisconsin, like race just wasn't spoken about and it was scarier. And I hope that, like I would say stuff where I'd be like, oh, yeah, my black friend. And they'll be like, don't say that. And it's like, well, that's actually, you're saying that her being black is negative and I shouldn't say that. And that is inherently racist. Like, I hope that people just embrace talking about and acknowledging race more.
Yeah, I think in order to end racism and to heal the disease that is racism in this country, we have to acknowledge that it exists, which is something that is that most people do not want to do. So I think I agree that that is the bare minimum starting point. We have to. I went to school in the Midwest as well. And Chicago is an interesting area because it inherently you don't think of the Midwest as like racist. But then when you start to delve a little deeper, you see like, oh, actually, like the entire city is segregated by a highway. And the black people live over here and the white people live over here. So these places, even though they don't talk about race, it's an issue. And so, yeah, I agree. You got to talk about it.
As I've posted more stuff, I'm interested in seeing the responses. And when someone says something negative, you want to like block them, but you're like, no, this is part of it. You have to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And someone responded to me and she's like, I hate this like Black Lives Matter agenda trying to make it look like everyone's racist. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, okay, I don't even know where to start with having a conversation here, because it's like, first, yeah, you just have to accept that like white people aren't inherently racist. Race is socially constructed and it tells us that races are different with different value and you have different qualitative, you know, situations that you can kind of control and have power over different races. So it's hard. People just like don't want to be seen as racist.
Exactly. Well, I think it's because like when we go to elementary school and middle school, we're kind of taught racists are bad. They wear white hoods. Don't be that. And then it's like Martin Luther King is good. He had a speech. I have a dream. And then it's like end of book, end of chapter. You guys go on out there and figure it out. And obviously that's not like a in-depth look at examination of race in America. So I understand.
Who wrote those books?
Right, exactly. So I understand the impulse to be reviled by examining, like, wait, there are things about me that aren't perfect. Like, yes, exactly. But it's like you have to just have an open heart. Like your children will be healthier for this. You will be healthier for this. The country will be healthier for this. So yes. Yeah.
How have you been holding up personally, like emotionally,
I'm exhausted.
Health-wise.
I'm exhausted. What are you talking about? I'm so tired.
Like, how are you functioning?
I'm not. You texted me at 3 p.m. and you said, hey, are you still wanting to do this podcast? And I totally forgot that this was something I agreed to. So I have no idea what day it is. I don't know where I am. All I know is, like, I have a show on Thursday at 8 p.m. and it's kind of everything else is a blur.
Also, I have been stalking you. I think that's one thing we've learned from this podcast. But did you jump like a lot in Instagram followers recently?
I did, yeah, like, I mean, like 60,000 people.
That's, do you know how hard it is to grow an Instagram following? I checked, I think you were at like 40k, and then I checked the other day and you're at like 70.
Yeah, I was at 19 like 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago.
Z-Way, that's insane. So you've in this time had an incredible Vanity Fair article come out, like that's why you're a little bit kind of it girl vibes right now. And you have had obviously great press, the New York Times and W Magazine in the past, but this Vanity Fair article is titled Z-Way has mastered the art of putting white people on the spot. Do you like this kind of title you're getting? How do you feel about it?
I love the interview. I thought Johanna did a really good job. She's like a very fantastic journalist. And I had been following her for years. So I felt, and she's covered lots of big celebrity, so I felt really honored that she would even email me to ask me if I wanted an interview. So I love the interview because I thought it got my points across well. I'm always, whenever I'm talking about my art, I like you as an artist, you want your art to just speak for itself, because you're like, if I talk about it, will people not understand? Will people be mad or think that my intentions behind it aren't as pure? I'm just trying to like support marginalized people and teach the world and help everyone heal from like racism. And so I don't know. I just, it makes me feel good. But hopefully, I don't know. I get nervous doing podcasts because I'm like, oh my gosh, like what if I say the wrong thing? Like, I don't, you know what I mean?
It's so funny because in my head, I'm like, she's so smart. She's so well-spoken. She's so funny.
Thank you.
I'm like, I have to keep up with Z-Way on this podcast. But that's what I love about Burning in Hell. It's like, what is your biggest insecurity, physically and emotionally? Let's get a little deeper.
My biggest physical insecurity? I don't know. I don't know. My biggest physical insecurity. Boobs, maybe? I don't know. I don't know. Maybe boobs. But I don't think I would get a boob job. Maybe I would, but I don't think I would because I'm like suspicious of like having plastic in my body. I'm like kind of earthy, but it, if there was a way to do it, if I could just magically make them like full, I would do that.
I feel like I've heard too many nightmare stories of like people popping their tit and stuff.
Yeah.
So I avoid it. But also, do you feel pressure like you want to have a bodacious body because of like what the media says or
well,
something?
Well, totally. I mean, I grew up and I was called like chicken legs by my like sixth grade science teacher, you know, which is inappropriate. But, and so I watch television like everyone else. I watch movies. I watch unscripted television. I want to look hot. So yeah, but I'm okay with my body.
Isn't it wild how, like, the stuff people say when you were in sixth grade about your body still affects you?
I know. It's actually so traumatic.
Like, a guy called me man arms in sixth grade, and I still, like, can't wear tank tops.
It's hard not to forget it.
And my friend, Remy, said I had elf ears, and even though my face has grown into my ears, I still will not wear a baseball cap.
Really?
Well, because I feel like they're pointing out of it.
Well, don't let that stop you. Live your life, man.
I know. I have to fight for the Yankees.
Fight for the Yankees. Go Sox. Go Red Sox.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah. That's the one thing that me and you do not agree on, but we won't even go there.
Yeah, we don't have to talk about the Patriots.
We don't talk about the Patriots. So, fuck the Patriots. So,
wow.
Also, what about your personality? Do you have any insecurities of how people have critiqued you as a vibe?
I mean, what's an insecurity about my personality? I think I have a good personality. I find myself very charming, and I think I make myself laugh. But also, I mean, I think, I don't know. I'm like trying to hate myself. Wait, let me think.
Do people ever critique you for like being too chatty?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, people who, I remember really, really acutely in college, someone saying to me that they thought, like at a lunch table, at a dining hall, she said to me, I think you're annoying and I don't know why you speak. But to me, I don't take that personally. I think that that is her projecting what she hates about herself. I think that she ultimately probably sees my face and either doesn't remember saying it or thinks that, you know, just doesn't remember this moment. But I can't forget it. So.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device or play on PC through Facebook Games.
So yeah, I try to forgive. It's really important for me as like I'm really kind of earthy. So I believe that like forgiveness is for yourself and it helps you like grow and heal and not carry like poison in your body. So like there are things that make me, that people have said that have insulted my personality, but I try to let go. I'm not perfect, but I try.
Yeah, it's like detaching from anger because anger is just like a toxin.
It just it hurts you. Like, forget these people. They don't even probably remember being mean to me.
And you went to school in a predominantly white high school.
Yes.
And college.
Yes. But I went to school in like a very brown middle school, elementary school.
Okay, so you actually knew like how to compare the experiences.
Oh, totally. It was just like a culture shock to go from like an inner city of Lawrence, Massachusetts to like this prep school.
It's wild. And how do you think your experience would have, or like you would have been different if you didn't go to a predominantly white high school?
Who's to say?
I know, it's a pretty, there's a lot of variables.
Yeah, exactly. I've always been an overachiever, so that would be the same if I had stayed at my public school or if I had gone to prep school. But who's to say I would have the connections? Who's to say I would have the same outlook on life? I think I have an acute analysis of race because of my experiences in a lower income neighborhood and then in like a super high income neighborhood. So I think so I'm really thankful for those experiences because I'm able to critique like American society in a really unique way.
Well, I also think that you kind of understand white culture.
Yes.
Because you've been so immersed in it. So that's why I think Baited is so great, because you know how to like relate to white girls and be able to talk to them while also like still understanding the bigger picture.
Well, I just ultimately, I come from a place not of like judgment and criticism, but like, oh, I actually know a lot of girls who remind me of Caroline and remind me of Allison, you know? So I, instead of being ultra judgmental, I'm going to try to ask questions that really get at the root of why people, why some of the things that they may have said are not exactly, are more problematic or more racist than they ever even imagined they were.
Ooh, you're so right. You're so right. You guys, if you are into this conversation, go to YouTube, check out Baited. I love the one. Everyone with Sydney Washington. It was hilarious. I also love the one with Pat.
Oh, yeah. That one is really funny where he's like, it's actually lost my space. Out? Yeah. So funny. He's so funny.
He's so funny because he was so emotional during it. Some people during your interviews, I feel like, get really tense and scared. Some are, like, overly cocky. Some, like, try to fool with you. Yeah. And you're like, honey, you're playing in my office. Yeah. Getting a little deeper into you, What is your way of sabotaging yourself?
How do I self-sabotage? Well, I'm a control freak. I am so controlling. And my life has been one long design. So I feel like I'm doing exactly what I want to be doing and wanted to be doing at, you know, age 5. But as a result, it's like you have to let go and let God. Like you can't strong arm your way into the position that the universe is going to put you in. So that's how I self-sabotage, where I'll try to control an email. And if people don't respond in 42 minutes, then I am going to write. And it's just like, dude, you need to relax, bruh.
I always say on this podcast, when I decided that my only goal each day was basically to not be depressed, things started to kind of just fall for me.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't like so focused on, the micro controlling of little things and little events. Did I book this gig? Did I get that? But as a type A person, it's hard to find that balance.
It's hard to find that balance. But ultimately, like, we only have one life to live. So we really have to treat ourselves with the kindness that we treat our friends, right? Like, you would never talk shit to your friend and be like, oh, you lazy piece of shit. Why haven't you gotten this thing that you should have gotten because you just found out it existed 30 minutes ago? It's like, no. So you wouldn't talk to your friend like that. So don't talk to yourself like that.
Oh, you didn't book that gig because you suck.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you suck. Exactly. And you don't deserve it.
Exactly. So I try to be kind to myself. I'm not perfect, but I try.
And you said that you've been kind of manifesting and wanting to do this since you were 5.
Totally.
How did you know?
Well, I wanted to be, when I was 5 years old, I wanted to be two things. I wanted to be a pop star and the president of the United States. And I feel like where I am right now is a good combination of like having like a good combination of like politics and like critiquing like American culture while also like doing my music and being silly and like wearing risque clothes if I want to, or covering myself up if I want to. Like, I just kind of live my life. You
100% nailed it.
Yeah.
You nailed it. You're the perfect combination of presenting but and talking about politics, but you're not like a boring politician.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I hope not. I don't think I could be a good politician because I feel like my therapist once told me to run for office, but I think I would be like, my feelings would get hurt. I'd be like, what do you guys mean you don't like me? I'd be like so hurt.
When I was younger, I actually would tell people I wanted to be president, but not for real. Like I didn't know a lot about politics, but if a guy asked me for like a nude, I'd be like, sorry, I'm going to be present one day, so I can't.
Honestly,
and
fair.
And I just like to flip that power, you know?
No,
be
we
like,
stand.
I want to be fucking president. Don't you realize?
You idiot.
As a type A person,
yeah,
do you have bad anxiety?
I do have anxiety. I realized that recently that I had anxiety because I was like, why am I stressed? It's like, oh no, you just have anxiety because again, I have like control issues that stem from random traumas when you're like a kid. So I just I need to be in control, and I feel anxious when I'm not in control. But I'm learning to let go.
How has that affected your, like, relationships? Have you had any boy toys recently?
No. Famously, someone broke up with me during my Caroline Calloway interview, who I was not dating. I know, isn't that funny? But no.
He texted you during it?
Yeah, he did. But my point, isn't that so mean? But no, I have a horrible dating track record. I think I'm a hard person to date if you feel threatened by women's success. truly.
Real same.
Yeah, like, I'm just a hard person to date because I'm really strong in my convictions, and, like, I'm not going to, like, minimize my success because of an ego. And also, I don't have a lot of time to, like, nurture someone in the way that maybe they want to. But, so, yeah.
Yeah, I was actually watching a documentary with Dr. Dre, and I found out that him and his wife got divorced. And him and his wife are the reason why I broke up with my ex-boyfriend a couple years ago.
That's wild. Why?
It was actually a comic, but I was watching the documentary, and she basically was like, if you're dating an artist like Dr. Dre, you have to be a rock, and he's a balloon. And he's going to fly wild, and you have to just be the rock. And I'm sitting next to this, like, comic I was dating, and I was like, I'm not a fucking rock.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not.
Yeah.
And I, like, remember having a freak out, like, this is going to be my future. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, maybe that woman woke up and was like, I'm not a rock anymore. I'm going to throw a rock in his glass house, and I'm out.
Got a tip. I broke up with someone once because of 90 Day Fiancé. Seriously, because what happened was I was watching 90 Day Fiancé and I saw this person like travel to like Nigeria for their love. And I was like, I can't even get my boyfriend, my ex-boyfriend to leave Greenpoint to see me. Like, I can't even get him to pick up my calls. Like, what am I doing? So yes, I'm deeply influenced by media, which is a shame of mine.
And I do think reality TV does have those golden, purest, realest moments, and they come in small batches, but every now and then something happens in reality TV that like shakes you.
Totally. I mean, where, definitely, because like, you start to see yourself.
Have you watched Summer House yet?
Of course I watched. I haven't watched every episode, but I've watched a lot of it, mostly because okay. You're on it. And
oh, thank you.
Yeah. And I remember when the girls were fighting with you because you were hooking up with Luke. Also, I was shocked by the sex sounds. I can't believe, I had texted you. I was like, are those your real sex sounds? Like, oh my God. Like, I could not believe it.
I'm trying to normalize female sexuality and expressing pleasure.
That you do, man.
God bless. Oh, I have one final question.
Sure.
Before we do a final game, your parents are from Nigeria.
Yes.
What the fuck do they think of you being like, I want to be a pop star?
They were like, no.
Were they first generation?
Yes. No, I mean, yeah, they immigrated.
Okay. So did you have to like convince them, or is it kind of like a just misunderstanding that you live with?
Well, Hannah, I don't know if you know this, but I'm not actually a pop star.
See, in my head, you're a comedy pop star. Well, are they okay with you in the comedy world? I mean, you have writing gigs on TV. You've been very successful, but are they happy with it now?
I don't think they have a strong concept of what I do for a living, honestly.
Really?
Really?
Do you care? Like, do you want them to understand, or you're kind of like, this is better?
No, I don't feel strongly either way. I think this is my life. And so I don't live for outside external validation. So if they got it and they were like into it, I'd be like, cool. But I don't know. It's hard to explain.
Most comics like only perform for external validation.
I understand that. I mean, I perform, the things that I do make me laugh. It's actually really annoying. Yeah. Like at my job, back when we used to have like a writer's room, like you'd catch me just laughing to myself and they'd be like, Josh Gondelman would be like, Zoe, why are you laughing? And he'd be like, oh, cause it's, you wrote a joke that you thought was funny. I'd be like, yeah. Like, so I really try to make myself
laugh.
Well,
it sounds like you have your own purpose. And you have your own, like, yeah, humor with yourself. So yeah. It sounds like you really can't, and maybe the fact that you are a control freak, it keeps you happy because you can control how you feel. And if
totally.
You just cared about everyone else, you'd blow your brains out.
Totally. I mean, and I'm not perfect. Like, obviously, you see a Twitter comment that's like, wow, Z-Way should cut her hair. It's like, oh my God. Like, I'm holding scissors to my bangs as we speak, you know? So it's not like I'm perfect, but I really, really try hard because it's like, again, it's like, I can't control what people think of me, but I can control what I think of myself.
Bless the fuck up. It's time to play our final game. You're doing amazing. Called the Seven Deadly Sins.
Seven Deadly Sins.
What are you greedy about, Z-Way?
Knowledge. I'm greedy about knowledge. I wish I could read a book a day. That's a place where I would love to get. But I don't know if I'll ever get there, but I wish that I could, I wish I knew more. Like,
you're
I just
so fucking smart.
Thank you, but
your thirst for knowledge is unquenchable.
No, but like legit, because it's just like I just wish I could read more books. I just wish I could be smarter so I could help more people and so I could help myself. Yeah.
Do you ever feel like with comedy, the mainstream comedy is like more, not basic, but I don't know, like, you have a little more highbrow humor, more intellectual humor. Do you ever feel like, shoot, if I dumb myself down, I might get more, like, widespread attention?
I definitely have, when I was younger and more immature, I thought, like, oh, I don't know if people would understand where I'm coming from. But mm-hmm. I think that there's a way to make things that are high concept, like conversations about race during, like, a cult, racial reckoning, palatable to masses of people. It takes actually a lot of, like, discernment and reading and like understanding of the world. So I think that there's ways to be super intellectual in like broad spaces. You just have to be patient and work on finding your audience. Because again, I've been doing this stuff for years. I've been talking about race for years, but finally after work, like finally after graduating, you know, like 2014, I've been able mm-hmm. to just like come into my own. But it wasn't like an overnight success.
No, that's why it makes me so happy to see you, like, having kind of a moment blowing up right now on Instagram, because I remember watching Baited right after you interviewed me, just because I'm like, this is a fun thing she's been doing, and thinking how good the content was, and the views were, like, okay, but I was like,
it was, like, 4,000 views. I was like, wow, you guys are haters. I get more views on my tweets.
I know. So to see you have like put in all this work and then to just see that you're getting attention for it just makes me happy, because it just shows like hard work, passion, shit happens eventually.
Yeah, I think Kendrick Lamar has this lyric in his song Element where he says careers take off, just got to be patient. So I listen to that a lot and be like, okay, like it may not happen for me today, but maybe someday, or maybe not, who knows? Honestly,
I love how you connect like music and pop stars with your inspiration. I don't know about you, but I'm obsessed with watching musician autobiographies.
I love.
There's a connection with comedians and like wanting to be rock stars, but like the Whitney Houston documentary, the Lady Gaga documentary.
Oh, I
even watched the Garth Brooks documentary.
Oh my gosh!
But it was I actually fucking love Garth Brooks.
Oh my god, that's absurd. I love it.
It's incredible. But yeah, you see them on stage, and just there's a weird connection between comedy and pop stars that you found.
Well, I think that every comedian wants to be musical, and every musician wants to be funny.
You're so right. You're so right. And the ones that I think find that like connection of the two are always incredible.
Yeah.
Whenever you go to a concert and in between they're like talking shit and you see their personality shine, it like makes you feel so much more connected.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
But I should never sing on stage because I have
Oh, really?
Problems.
You have to just take some voice classes. I'm sure you have a voice somewhere in there.
My mom's a literal like jazz singer.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Jazz.
Really?
But I am she's a badass, and I'm just cool. Clap. I support.
That's awesome.
Who are you envious of?
Who am I envious of? So I don't think envy is healthy, but to play the game,
yeah.
I am envious of Rihanna because of the way her face is so symmetrical. And she's also a February Pisces like myself. So I just feel really deeply connected to her like not don't give a fuck attitude. Like I just think she's cool as hell. So I'm not actually envious of her
music so bad in a very selfish way. Like
yeah.
I know she's building her like brand and her mental health or whatever. I want a song just for me.
But I think that she gave us a lot of ante and we have to be thankful.
Yes, I know. But yeah, I've never seen someone with that kind of attitude. I used to play tennis tournaments in the West Indies a lot.
Yeah.
And she's from Barbados.
Yeah.
And the Bayesian people would always be like, oh my god, Rihanna was so annoying. She would just run around and like sing all the time and everyone was like, shut up.
Oh my
Rihanna.
Gosh, they're jealous.
Yeah.
Jealous.
And then she blew the fuck up.
I
Jelly.
Know. I love her. I love Rihanna deeply, deeply, deeply.
I love her too. What are you gluttonous about? So this is everything greed. This is like, what do you overindulge in?
I overindulge in Housewives.
Okay, which is your favorite?
My favorite Housewives, that's hard because it depends on the era. Because I was introduced to Real Housewives through Beverly Hills and watching the dissolution of the Kim Richards and Kyle Richards friend relationship. So
have you
really
written a thesis on this by any chance?
I could. I don't know why, like, The New Yorker hasn't reached out to me to be like, do you want to write about, like, Real Housewives of Beverly Hills? Because I could.
I do. I mean, you are very busy, but I do think you doing recaps would be incredible.
I know. I tried to do a recap of Real Housewives of Potomac for Vulture, but they just weren't picking it up. But I love Potomac. Potomac, I think, is the hottest right now.
Yeah.
But Beverly Hills in its heyday.
I'm, like, kind of new to the Housewives stuff. But
yeah.
New York just reminds me of, like, a lot of my friends' parents.
Yeah.
and it just is like too close to home
for me. Totally. I feel
like just like loud, drunken New York women. Yeah. But then Beverly Hills is so different in the culture and the fashion and how they like fight and how they speak to each other and the pools and the mansions. So it's
different. I love Beverly Hills for that reason. It just feels like she. Like it feels so posh. Even though it's like a house of cards, I'm like, yes, give me like $25,000 glasses. Yeah, exactly.
And the stuff they get offended by in Beverly Hills, New York would say like 20 times in a conversation, no one would bat an eye.
Exactly, exactly. Because, well, I think that the Beverly Hills girl, if they were mixed with the New York girls, they would cry. They would be bullied until they quit the show. Whereas if New York went to Beverly Hills, they would absolutely run over those girls.
Yeah, because the New York, it's such a different vibe. Exactly. Would you ever move to LA?
I would move to LA for sure. I like LA. I'm an LA, like my entire personality is based off of the film Clueless. So I would move to Beverly Hills, Bel Air in a heartbeat, but I'm a New Yorker.
I can see that for you. But I do think in conversation, like you're real. Yeah. Not that like everyone in LA is fake, but like you have the New York kind of like, you're not afraid to make people uncomfortable.
Totally. If I could make my living in like in New York, I would, but I'm down for LA.
Yeah, I always say, like, I want to live in New York, but, like, have projects in LA. When was the last time you experienced extreme wrath or anger?
Experienced extreme wrath? Anger.
Do you have a temper on you?
I do. So I am, like, very closed off emotionally. I'm emotionally repressed. But then there is a moment where I flip a switch, and it is, like, shocking to everyone, including myself.
Why do you think you're emotionally repressed?
Well, just because it's like you kind of have to repress your emotions to be like a functioning Black woman in society. Because if you express yourself in either like extreme too much, people think you're like hysterical, or they think that you're an angry Black woman. So it's like I've just learned to function in a society that just would prefer that I am without any expression.
Wow.
Yeah, isn't that deep? Yeah. Tough, right?
Yeah. No, but that's what I want to hear, because it's so true that you like would feed into a stereotype. But then I think a lot of people, because they know they're expected to act a type of way, will sometimes just be like, fuck it. You to say I'm the kid who misbehaves, look, I'm misbehaving, you're happy now.
Well, that's like Omarosa, right, on like reality TV, where she's like, you guys want a Black villain? Oh, I'll give you a villain, you know? And she goes on to have like a decade-long career. So it has value to some people. But like I just want to conserve my energy, and I want to spread goodness to the world. So yeah.
But that's why I think beta is so interesting, because with all the like tension and awkwardness, you have this like calm, light energy to you that makes it just like not what people would think the conversation would be.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I hope that it feels positive. It doesn't feel negative.
I laugh the whole time.
Okay, good. Thank you.
You're also smart. So as like someone who like I love interviewing people, I like to see how you handle what you've created.
The key is to just my interviewing tip for that show, how I do it, is I listen to what they say, and I take even the grain of emotional truth that they're coming from, and I try to relate, and then I try to question it in a way that feels not judgmental but like helpful.
Listening is the most important part
of a good interview. You gotta listen.
And yet, you'll read things about them and be able to, like, I feel like by the end of the Caroline Calloway thing, you had gotten so deep into her psyche.
I'd go there like the real world.
When was the last time you were, like, a lazy piece of shit, like a sloth?
Not recently. I mourned for the days that I was lazy. I'm lucky enough, I'm so blessed, like, I have a lot to do, just because I want to get all that there is to do before I like die. So I'm just trying to like keep my life busy, but I cannot wait for the day where I can like go to the beach and sit and do nothing and not respond to an email. I long for that. I miss it.
And maybe take some content.
Yeah.
At the beach with a good look.
Take content at the beach? That's work.
No, but just one little vibe, like one vibe shot.
No, that's work.
Yeah, I know, you're right. This is just my brain. I never stop. It never stops. I also, whatever. Anyway, summer to me is work. You know what I mean?
Are you in the summer house now?
I am not right now.
I can't wait. I actually was thinking about auditioning for summer house at one point.
Oh my god, you'd be so good!
I know, but I think the ship has sailed, unfortunately. But there was a moment where I was like, should I do this?
I know, you're like, now I've like blown up for legitimate reasons, but...
No, not at all. I love summer house.
You'd be great on Summer House. Because it is about, like, I always say it, reality TV's matured me because I'm forced to be in social situations I never would, like, voluntarily put myself in.
Totally. Well, there's a lot of pressure to look at yourself in the mirror and be like, why did I react this way when I'm drunk? Like, yeah. Oh my God, seeing myself drunk would be the hard part.
Well, that's the one thing that people forget about the show is, like, a lot of the time we're hammered. Like, when I was giggling during Kyle's speech, we'd been drinking for 5 hours.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't just being rude. Like, we're hammered.
Yeah, totally. That would be scary for me.
I have, like, a on-camera drunk and off-camera drunk. Where on-camera drunk, I'm always, like, a little aware. Where off-camera drunk, I will just, who cares what's happening? Gosh. It's fun. This is a tough one. When was the last time you let your pride get in the way of something? Like, your ego?
I try not to cut my nose to spite my face. That's one of my favorite sayings. When was the last time I let my pride get in the way of something that was good?
Whether it's career, friendship, dating.
I mean, maybe, like, not responding to a text message when it's, like, the best idea is to be vulnerable, but I would rather, like, save my pride and just, like, be the cool one who, like, doesn't respond to a text for a week, which turns into 2 weeks, which turns into a month, which turns into, oh, we're never speaking again. So I've definitely had those moments.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Like, I have a lot of pride with guys, but then part of me is, like, if it's really meant to be, I feel like me not responding to a text or me acting a little cold.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like our energies hopefully would find each other regardless, but I'm still single like you. I feel like our dating is pretty similar, so that's
well, fine. Totally. But here's the thing. It's twofold, right? Because on the one hand, it's like, I don't want to ever feel like I need a partner to complete me, right? I want them to be an addition to my life. So in that regard, it's like, I'm trying to just be cool with, like, being single, because it's like, you know, I'm the best person to love me, as Demi Lovato says. But then on the other hand, you know, but then on the other hand, it's like, yeah, man, like, when you're sleeping by yourself and you're like, wow, like, damn, like, I'm really horny, or, like, I wish I had a hug, like, fuck. Mm-hmm. So it's give or take.
Yeah. And I think I've gotten to the point, finally, I'm, like, 28 now, where I'm single and enjoying my career, and I just don't like when guys distract me.
Yeah.
Or if they don't have positivity and good energy, it's like, if you're questioning it, it's like, I don't need that.
No, totally. I don't like to play games. I think I'm too old for that. I think there's not enough time on this earth for games. How about that, honey?
True. Not enough time for anything. True. And perfect last question. When was the last time you lusted over someone?
Every day.
Do you have, like, a celebrity crush you're obsessed with, or, like, a guy at the bodega?
I have... Yes, I'm really, really attracted to Robert Pattinson. I just think he's a fantastic actor.
I love his art.
Yeah.
Is there a specific movie that you're into him?
Twilight, him in Rover, him in Good Time, him in, like, I love, like, the Cosmopolis. Like, I'm a Robert Pattinson stan.
And his accent, too, on top of it.
I just think he's a fantastic actor or someone who appreciates his craft. I love his interviews with, like, GQ. I think that they're just kind of, like, spellbound. I think he's talented.
He has, like, a mystery and a swag about him. Totally. I ship it.
Well, I think he has a girlfriend or something, so don't please.
I mean, it's what is dating nowadays? Everyone's either getting pregnant or breaking up just in the quarantine. I don't trust anyone. To wrap this up, I ask this question to everyone, and I'm very interested in your answer. What do you do to cope with your hell?
What do I do to cope with my hell?
Yeah, what advice would you give to people who are going through hell right now?
Oh, be kind to yourself. Always be kind to yourself, because you wouldn't treat your friend like shit, so don't treat yourself like shit. That's the best advice I ever got, and the best advice I'll ever give.
And as someone who's type A, you're probably prone to being really hard on yourself, and yeah. You think that's, like, positive for you. But then you realize, like, if you're the one that can make the decision to just be happy, and it's not, like, you being lazy.
Yeah, I think ultimately you can always be patient with yourself, and you deserve it. You only have one you, so be, and you're as good as you're gonna get. You're great.
Oh, you're so positive. I can't thank you enough for taking the time to come to hell. Anyway, where can people follow you? Where can people read about you? Where can people listen to you, watch you?
Well, follow me on Instagram at ZWayF. Follow me on Twitter at ZWay. I have my weekly live show on Instagram. Last week I interviewed Rose McGowan, so check that out if you can. And this week I'm going to be interviewing Jeremy O'Harris and Dana Donnelly. So it's going to be a good time.
Ooh, so exciting. Lastly, now that you're getting a lot of attention for this, do you feel any differently about the project? Are you keeping your head down and like,
I think
like
I'm just,
there's excitement.
I think I'm honestly just focusing on the work. I don't want to ever be like someone who like lets, I don't want to like, yeah, I'm just trying to focus on the work and try to make the best product and trying to help as many people as I can.
I love that. I'm so excited to see what more you create. Everyone follow ZYZIWEF on Instagram, Twitter, and thanks for coming to hell. We'll talk to you later.
Perfect.
Bye.
Bye.